today. Now, who here so far this winter has had a cold or has been sick or something? Just raise your hand if you've been, if you've had a cold or you've been sick. Good number. Of course, a lot of people stood up during the Misha Berach prayer. And who here has had a flu shot this year? Flu shot. Okay, about half the people. Of course, if you're over 50, you're supposed to get it and everything else. Of course, this year's flu shot was kind of useless, they say, but that's the way it goes. But I want to talk about sickness for a little while and infections, because I'm going to talk about an infectious God. And most people get sick when you're around sick people, right? That's how most people end up getting sick. In fact, those of you that have had school-age children, you know what that's like. They come home from school or from daycare or whatever, and somebody's in the daycare or school that's sick, and then it travels through the entire class. Next thing you know, your child's sick, then your whole family's sick, everybody's sick. That's just the kind of the way it goes. And the real problem is that people are infectious. That's what ends up happening. And how do we get infections from other people? Well, there's the famous classic, right, like that. And when you do that, out comes spray, and everybody around about, it's floating around, even the spray that you can't see, it's kind of floating around, grabs onto everybody, into their nostrils, boom, next thing you know, they're sick. Or the classic, there's the classic that we all grew up with, you know, you want to make sure you cover your mouth adequately, so, sneeze in your hands, oh, it's nice to meet you, bingo, next thing you know, that person's sick, and so forth, or the coughing syndrome, and so whatever it is, and that's, you know, I just learned, actually, relatively recently, that they're now teaching in the schools that when children sneeze, you're supposed to sneeze into your clothes. When I grew up, you didn't want to sneeze in your clothes, you'd get crud all over your clothes, right? So now it's just the other way around. You don't sneeze in your hands, which you could easily wipe off on your clothes, ruins your clothes. Maybe that's why children don't wear, you know, suits or, you know, good clothes anymore to school. Maybe they handle all that crud and so forth. But regardless of that, did you know that God is also infectious? And I'm going to prove it to you. And I want to turn to Exodus chapter 34, which is in today's portion, Exodus 34, verse 29, and it says this: when Moses came down from Mount Sinai with the two tablets of the testimony in his hands, he was not aware that his face was radiant because he had spoken with the Lord. What was going on here is that Moses was in the presence of the Lord, and it caused an infection. The infection was that God's glory spread to Moses. That's what ends up happening. And others saw it, and they freaked out about it, because that's what it says in verse 30. It says, when Aaron and all the Israelites saw Moses, his face was radiant, and they were afraid to come near him. So that was the problem. Now, maybe what freaked out the Israelites was that maybe Moses' face wasn't full of the glory of God, but maybe he had horns on it. You think, what? Where does that come from? Well, the word for radiance of one's face in the Hebrew is the word karan, which also can mean, in Hebrew, grew horns. So in other words, it can mean either radiated light or grew horns. Now, why am I even talking about this? Because what happened was, one of the early church fathers, Jerome, who translated the Bible into Latin, became the Latin Vulgate, which was the predominant Bible used in the Christian world for over 1,000 years and so forth, he translated it, Moses grew horns. And so consequently, you see in a lot of medieval art, Moses having horns. In fact, the classical work of sculpture, Michelangelo's Moses, which sits in Italy, has him with big horns on it. It's because of that translation. Now, unfortunately, St. Jerome was an anti-Semite, and a gross anti-Semite, in fact, and it's most likely, I'd have to say, that he probably deliberately mistranslated, because obviously in its context, it makes no sense that he had horns, right? And what ends up happening throughout the ages is that Jews are often associated with having horns and so on, because horns represent the goats, billy goats, and Jews were demonic in the Christian world, and so that was the idea. And even up into our recent era, I mean, I've heard other Jewish people, especially in areas where there's not as many Jews, and they introduce themselves as somebody's Jewish, and the people start looking to see if they have horns because of these translations. I mean, it's really sad. But the reality here is, the clear translation is that the radiance of the glory of God infected Moses to such a level that his face was covered with light. What happens when we're infected by God? The reality is we are transformed. Our countenance changes when we are in the presence of the Lord, like Moses. You see, most people, you can see from their countenance what they're really feeling, right? Unless you have a poker face, so to speak. In other words, you can tell a person whether they're stressed or at peace by looking at their face, whether they're happy or they're sad or they're angry by looking at their face, because a person's countenance reflects their heart. That's the reality. Now, the new covenant actually describes what happens to somebody when they're infected by the Lord. And I want us to turn to Galatians chapter 5, or it'll be up there. Galatians chapter 5, verse 22. This talks about somebody who's full of the Spirit of God. They've been infected by the Lord. It says the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. This is what happens to somebody who has been infected by the Lord. The scripture here uses this concept of the fruit of the Spirit. And let's talk a little bit about fruit. See, fruit is the natural process of plant life. If you think about it, one of the first things that trees, let's say in particular in the spring, which we'll be coming up to soon, they flower. If there's a connection with other, they're pollinated. Then what ends up happening is the flowers turn into fruit, and so forth. Now the fruit just comes naturally. It's just a natural process of the tree. It's not like, as you know, let's say if we're taking an apple tree, get into the midsummer and the apple tree is sitting there with his branches and he's looking down and he's, man, I got no fruit. What do I need to do? You know, like pushing, trying to squeeze those little apples to come on out. No, it just happens, right? It's the natural process and so on. And what does the fruit contain? This is what's really interesting. Think about it. The fruit contains the seeds of reproduction. In other words, the fruit is infectious because that fruit is what's going to pass on and become the next generation. It carries to the next group and so forth. What's interesting about the fruit of the Spirit that's described here in Galatians is that it's very similar to God's description of himself to Moses in this very same passage that we were reading in Exodus 33, where it talks about that Moses was given the privilege to see the Lord, and as God passed by, the Lord described himself in the following way: I am compassionate, I am gracious, I am slow to anger, abounding in love and faithfulness. In other words, the Lord's characteristics, these are what he is like. And so what ends up happening is that when we come into the presence of the Lord, when we're infected by God, that type of character carries over to us as well. In other words, our countenance changes like Moses, but also, most importantly, our heart changes and our character changes because it spreads to you and me. How do we get infected? How do we get infected by God? Well, actually, quite honestly, it's very similar to catching a cold, because something's got to get inside of us. To catch something, it's got to get inside of us. And I'd like to turn your attention to 2 Corinthians chapter 3, which talks about this a little bit. 2 Corinthians chapter 3, David read part of this today. And 2 Corinthians 3, verse 7. It says, now, if the ministry that brought death, which was engraved in letters and on stone, came with glory, so that the Israelites could not look steadily at the face of Moses because of its glory, fading though it was, will not the ministry of the Spirit be more glorious? If the ministry that condemns men is glorious, how much more glorious is the ministry that brings righteousness? For what was glorious has no glory now in comparison with the surpassing glory. And if what was fading away came with glory, how much greater is the glory that which lasts? See, what Paul is really trying to do here is to compare the glory that was experienced at Sinai by Moses with the glory of those who receive Yeshua as their Messiah. It is a greater glory. That's what ends up happening. The new covenant emphasis is that there is a greater glory when Yeshua comes. And so the first step of being infected by the presence of the Lord is to receive God's provision for greater glory, which is Yeshua himself. The scripture says about Yeshua that he is the image of the invisible God, that he is the Word or the Torah made flesh, that he is full of grace and truth. And so the first thing that has to happen to us, where it begins, is we have to receive the infection of God, his infectiousness, by receiving what he has given to us. It plants within us something that begins to develop and to grow, and it becomes transformational. That's the first step. The next thing is having time and space. Having time and space. This is how we receive an infection from God. It's just like an infectious disease when you think about it. To get it, you've got to be around it, right? To get a disease, you've got to be around it. And the same is true with the infection of God. You've got to be around it. In Judaism, there's the concept of having sanctified time and space. In other words, there is a certain time that's set aside by the Lord, certain space that is set aside by the Lord, and when we enter into that time and space, we are impacted by the Lord. An example of that for time, a separate time, is the Shabbat, a time that's set aside by the Lord. And a separate space is the synagogue where we come and we worship him. And to be infected by God, we have to be able to set aside times and space where we enter his space. And when we enter his space, his infectiousness comes over us and begins to transform us. That's what happens. I begin almost every service with this statement. I don't think I said it today, but I often say this in at the beginning of every service. That I pray that when you come here, that you leave different than when you came in. Why is that the case? Because when you come into his space, you will be transformed. You don't have a choice. You will be touched by the presence of the Lord when you come into his space. That's the issue. Why? Because you're infected by God. It's like being around an infectious disease, but of course in a positive way. We are transformed when we're in the presence of the Lord, just like Moses was. The same is true with the Shabbat. You see, if we treat the Shabbat like every other day, we won't get anything out of it because it's not a time that's set aside for the Lord. But Yeshua said that the Sabbath was made for man and not man for the Sabbath. In other words, what he means by this is that it's set apart for you and me. It's not set apart for the Lord. It's not like God gets anything out of the Shabbat, right? Because he is at rest. But the purpose of the Shabbat is for us so that we can be recharged by coming into his presence, by setting aside the time of the daily grinds of the week and setting it aside and being in his presence and being changed. That's the idea. It means that we set apart our time for the Lord. The more we do it, the more we're infected by the Lord. The same is true every day, is giving God time and space every single day. By reading his words, by praying, this is what charges us to be in his presence, to transform us, and so on. The third way that we're infected by the Lord is by walking with him and doing his works, or the mitzvot. After the resurrection, Peter and John, two of Yeshua's disciples, were arrested, and they were brought before the Sanhedrin. And they were questioned as to what they were doing, preaching about this man named Yeshua, right? And the people... The Sanhedrin realized that these men were not scholars. They said about Peter and John, they were just ordinary men. But they realized that something extraordinary had happened to these ordinary men. And this is what they said about Peter and John. They took note that these men had been with Yeshua. They had walked with him for 3 years, and as a consequence of that, they were changed. They were transformed. Walking with God day by day, it's transformational. How do we do that? What does that mean to walk with God day by day? Does it mean that we cloister ourselves away in a monastery, pray all the time, and excuse me, and so on, and that's the way we walk with God day by day? No, I don't believe that. Excuse me. I believe that when we acknowledge that God is in our midst in whatever we're doing, that's when we're walking with the Lord. Whether we're a teacher or a homemaker or a carpenter or a business person, when we turn to the Lord in the midst of our work, what we're doing is that we're extending the kingdom of God in whatever we're doing. We are walking with him. We are talking with him in what we're doing. We need to see ourselves in our workplaces, in our homes, as being an extension of what he's trying to accomplish. And when we walk with him, we are transformed, no question. We are actually participating in Tikkun Olam by repairing the world by the power of the Spirit of God. Now, just like there are ways to prevent infections, right? There's also, we can create obstacles for God's infection in our life. In fact, in the portion that we read today out of Exodus, we see that very thing. The Israelites were afraid, and so they didn't want to be infected with this shining light, this radiance. And so they asked Moses, or Moses put a veil over his face so they wouldn't make them afraid. Two or three weeks ago, I read from this portion in Revelation chapter 3. This is where Yeshua says, "Here I am. I stand at the door and knock. And if anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I will come in and eat with him and he with me." You see, when we first acknowledge it, Yeshua, when Yeshua first comes and is presented to us as being the Messiah, we have a choice to open the door or not, whether we're going to allow him in or not. We can keep the door closed and he can't get in. He doesn't force his way in. But the same is true after we've accepted Yeshua as the Messiah, because as I said last week, if you think about your body as a house, your house has a lot of rooms, and it has a lot of doors, and a lot of closed doors. And you have to open those individual doors to allow him to come in. But you can close those doors, and you can prevent him from coming in. And the reality is, all of us close the doors to the Lord at different times in our life. It doesn't matter whether you know God or not, you've closed your doors to the Lord. We all do it. We see it here, when someone comes here, and they don't know the Lord, they haven't met Yeshua, but the person is touched and is impacted by the Lord. But sometimes, rather than opening up and asking the Lord to really show himself, they become afraid. It's like the Israelites. They become afraid of what they see. What does this mean for me? And because their doors have been locked for a long time, they're afraid of unlocking them because they don't know what's going to happen. So they keep them closed. Or for those who do know the Lord, who come in here and God is from time to time shines his light in areas of our lives that we've kept closed to God. It could be painful memories or bad habits, or it could be grudges that we've held. We don't want to let go, and the Lord isn't shining his light, shining his light. It's like he's knocking on the door here saying, "Will you open up?" Well, we become afraid. We keep the door closed. We don't want him to come in. Or it could be that God is moving you to do something that's a bit challenging. You're afraid to do it, but intuitively you know this is what the Lord is asking you to do, but you're afraid because it means taking a step of faith. It means going out beyond the natural. It means really trusting God. You know it's the right thing and it's the Lord, but there's fear and it becomes all-consuming. I dealt with this for years and years and years. God was calling me to something in my life, but I was just afraid. I was afraid of really trusting him until finally I opened up, and it was very challenging. Sometimes we think, what would other people think if I did this? Those are the kinds of things that hold us back. They keep the doors closed in our lives. And it prevents us being infected by the presence of the Lord. Also, another way of preventing the infection is by removing ourselves from the time and space with God. A lot of times I hear from different people, and I'm not trying to target anybody, but different people in the congregation and so on. I was just too tired to come. I was too stressed. I have a burden against another person. Or there's conflicting responsibilities in my life. And the classic, which is the classic one, and again, I'm not targeting anybody, is my children have activities on Saturday morning. Now, here's the big question for those of you that have children like that. What is fundamentally best for children? Is them becoming a mediocre soccer player or being infected by God? Really? Mediocre soccer player or being infected by God? Which is more important? You see, God's infections, they last for a lifetime. It alters the course of history. But soccer? I don't even like soccer. You know? But let's... You know, it's so funny. I don't know if you noticed in the newspaper, this past week, the Richmond Times-Dispatch, you know, they have these forums where they gather people together. And the forum this past week was to discuss, you know, whether athletes and entertainers should be presenting a better model to the children, whether they have an undue influence in society's life, and so on. And then we get irritated when athletes are paid so much money and entertainers are paid so much money. You're like, what are they doing? But you know who's to blame? You and me. That's who's to blame. Because we put such emphasis on it. And our children, we want them to get all involved as if all of these wonderful things, they're going to become a great singer, entertainer, and so on and so forth. And I've got nothing against entertainment and sports. I like both. But folks, it's a misplaced priority. And when we don't put the Lord first, especially our children, we wonder what happens to our children down the line. That's what ends up happening. That's the reality. Then we wonder why we don't feel the same anymore. You know, it's like, then we begin to blame it on the space. It must be the synagogue. Something's changed here. See, it's not the same. It's that choir. They're into the choir stuff now. See? Whatever. It's got to be that. Or they blame the time. Saturday mornings, it's just not a good time for me. There's too many activities. The stores have got all the great sales. Yeah. What about the Shabbat? That's all I would say about that one. But see, these are the kinds of things that we all do. I've heard it again and again and again. When people, you know, I've had these conversations. I've been here for 18 years. I've had these conversations with so many people that who, you know, you don't see them for a few weeks and so forth, month or whatever. You call them up. Well, I don't feel the same. And the reason they don't feel the same, they haven't been here. That's why. That's what ends up happening. And they're no, the infection of the Spirit of God is not as strong anymore because they've been putting up the obstacles, the veil, like the Israelites did with Moses. Now, here's my conclusion to all this. Just like infectious diseases don't stop with you, right? So too, when you're infected by God, you become infectious around about people around about you. You don't have to do a whole lot when you're infected by the Lord. See? When you're because the infection just spreads automatically. It just comes out. It just spreads around, just like a disease, but in a good sense. People, other people notice. Hopefully they notice the Lord and not weirdness right in you. But hopefully they notice that there's something about you that's attractive, that's full of compassion, grace, graciousness, full of joy and peace, because that's the fruit of the Spirit. That's what's been described. That's what people ought to be able to see. And when we're infected by the Lord, that's what ends up happening. And begins to infect them and begins to change them. We don't have to do a whole lot to share about the good news of Yeshua when we're infected by God, because people are going to ask you, what is it about you? And then it's just a natural thing. Let's close in prayer.